Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Rajiv Sethial talks about performing stand-up on all seven continents, including Antarctica.
Our group was 60 Indian doctors and my Caucasian college roommate, Joe. So we crossed the 600-mile Drake Passage. What is that? Well, it is home to the world's roughest seas, where ships can pitch up to 40 feet. The ship is rocking, so it's going back and forth. It's also rolling. It's going side to side. And then it's also pitching. It's going up and down. So if you're a point in space, you could just imagine this point in space. Just take your finger and just wave it around crazily. That's how you're moving.
Today on the show, comedian Rajiv Sethial talks about visiting Antarctica and doing stand-up on the continent. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Rajiv Sethial, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week by, comedian Brent Tobler. Rajiv, do you know Brent Tobler?
I know the name. I don't know him personally.
He's a funny dude, man. He lives in Denver now, but he's from Wyoming. And his stories are all very, very, very dramatic, very unusual. Not like, and I don't want to say normal people, but not like normal people's stories. Like, he's been on Storyworthy three times over the last 10 years. The first time the story, I'm not laughing. The story was how I tried to kill my father.
That's dramatic. And I figure if he's in Wyoming, he would have cut the population in half.
The second story is, he calls it Crimes from the Mall. It's when he stole from a shopping mall, a Dillard's in a shopping mall, the only shopping mall that, oh no, this one doesn't, but there is one shopping mall in Wyoming that has only one escalator. There's only one escalator in Wyoming. Anyway, Brent Tobler stole $500,000 worth of merchandise from a department store. That
from
happened.
Dillard's?
That's correct.
So $500,000.
Half a million, yeah. He did not go to jail.
Wow, that was their market cap, I thought. Wow, good for him.
And then the third time he came on just last week was about his night with a porn star. So, you know, my point is Brent Tobler, he's an interesting guy. You guys should go back and listen to Brent Tobler on Storyworthy. He's so funny. But not today, because today I'm here with Rajiv Sethial, and Rajiv brings forth the topic Antarctica. So it's a very clean topic. I think we know a little bit of what we're in for. At least we're going to go to a continent most of us don't go to. That's for sure, right? I mean, it's not very well trodden, is it, Rajiv?
That's very true. I think maybe 100,000 people total have ever been there. It's not that many. Actually, it might have gone over 1 million now. But either way, out of the 100 billion people who have lived, it's not that many of a percentage.
Yeah. And how many people live there full time?
Only about 1,000 or so, because they're researchers and they go back and forth from the rest of the world there. So I don't think anyone permanently lives there.
That's very interesting, because if somebody had said to me, are there like suburbs and roadways and shopping malls in Antarctica? I think I would have said yes.
That's Wyoming. There's
the big town of Wyoming. That's exactly right. The one with the escalator.
That's right. No escalators in Antarctica. Maybe there are, though. Maybe there is one.
So I am very excited to hear about this. I have a buddy named Tal that I play tennis with, and he and his wife went to Antarctica, and they did get to see, you know, the penguins and, of course, the glaciers, as it were. And it was very amazing. I remember it was very, very cold, and they must have a limited amount of people who can go there, because isn't it all like at this juncture in our time in history, isn't it like all very precarious in Antarctica, that they don't want it to get ruined, as it were?
That's very true. And I was really happy that a lot of the people on the cruise actually, and it's actually an expedition, not a cruise. I kept calling it a cruise. They said, it's not a cruise. I go, what's the difference? They said, well, a cruise is you're going to a place, but you're mostly on it for the boat. You're there for the ship. An expedition is you've got a destination. And they were just saying, it's like calling a singer-songwriter a guitarist. It's like, well, they also play guitar, but they're a singer-songwriter, man. They don't just play the guitar.
But wait a second. I mean, on the cruise ship, though, like you could get off and then you go look around the Caribbean island or whatever. So you could be on expedition at that juncture. And then on the boat, you know, you may be doing the rock climbing. All of it could be sort of in other words, I think that they should, especially now after the coronavirus, they should just forget the word cruises and go with expeditions.
Expedition sounds much more impressive. I would agree with you there. So the good part is everybody on board, and when we got to Antarctica, was very respectful because you're only supposed to get within a certain number of feet or meters of the wildlife, and you're not supposed to take anything. So a lot of people said, hey, bring me back a rock or something, and I didn't. I didn't even take one for myself. I guess Mr. Tobler would have stolen $500,000 worth of them, but I didn't even take one, and I don't think anyone did. I think we respected that rule.
That's very cool, actually. In the now, again, I'm probably wrong. Are there souvenir shops, as it were?
Yeah, there are, because there are certain bases there where there's research, and there's the southernmost bar in the world called the Faraday Bar. So there are gift shops at some of these places that you can actually buy a couple things.
And what can you get at the bar?
You can actually, in this day and age of Me Too, I don't know, I'm only the messenger here, though. Evidently, back in the day, or maybe even still, women can get free drinks if they give them a bra, which I thought was really funny. But I guess you can get vodka tonics and whiskeys and beer and wine, whatever people bring down from South Africa or Australia or South America.
Yeah, how do you even go? Like, where's the ships? Is it in Miami and then you just go south? Oh, no. It's like in Brazil, right? Where's the ship?
So there are multiple ways to get there. I researched it for about a year before actually going. And you can go from Australia. You can go from Africa. But the much, much closest, the closest place by far to go would be South America. And it's technically Ushuaia is the city and it's Argentina is the tip.
That is very interesting. I love that. I love geography. That's good stuff. So that's one of the things that you have, Rajiv, that I have never met anybody before, that you have done stand-up comedy on all 7 continents.
That's right. You know, we look for things in this game that differentiate us. And I thought, what is something I can do? And I was in the Ice House in Pasadena, and this comic was talking about, not bragging, just kind of talking about, you know, road stories, war stories, saying that he had performed on all 6 continents that had people. And it just sparked an idea between that and seeing Delta Airlines saying that it goes to 6 continents, going, has anyone done 7? And I researched it, and I asked a number of comics who were very well traveled, and they all said they didn't know anyone who had done it.
And was Antarctica always the 7th that was lost, or, you know, that didn't get the attention?
I think so, because, you know, funnily enough, on this expedition, there were 2 other comics on board, Indian comics, which was shocking to me. How is it possible that there are not that many Indian comedians, and then there are 3 of us on this boat? It sounds like a joke, like 3 comedians go to Antarctica. But they hadn't done the other continents. And as far as I know, when I was the first person on board to perform in Antarctica, somebody was asking, are you the first person ever to do stand up there? And I go, that's a hard claim to make, man. I mean, there's a Faraday bar there. I'm sure some idiot got up and told jokes one night in the bar. I don't think you can make the claim that you're the first person ever to do stand up, but I might be the first professional stand up comic to do it. That's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have humor there. It's not like, you know, they're not ever, you know, it's not that they're not a laughing people.
It's not Germany.
As it were.
Yeah.
You're so funny. Well, I'm anxious to hear this story. I had Veer Das on the show, and you were just saying Indian comedians. He's very, very popular. Now, he comes over to my apartment. This is like last year. And he pulls up in a very sharp town car with a driver who opened up the door for Veer. And then, you know, he was dressed very well. I didn't know if he was confused that he was going on the Jimmy Kimmel show or my show. But anyway, he looked great. Nicest guy in the world. And then, you know, we did our interview. It was fabulous. He's super interesting. Super interesting. And then when I saw that Rishi Kapoor passed away, I thought of Veer right away because we talked about Veer appearing in a movie with him. So anyway, then he left and then I got a chat. I chatted with the driver for a while because when you pull out of my driveway, there's this like a blind spot. And anyway, that was like the first time anybody ever came over like that. I'm not sure why I'm bringing it up to you, but
that's
I thought, you know,
high end, very top shelf, very, very. Yeah. It's very non-comic though. I think of a comic as like, I'm more inclined to turn up on a unicycle than in a town car.
That's so funny. But you know, he's a great guy. He's super professional. I find that the most professional people or not the most professional, but the most accomplished are the most professional, as it were, in terms of time, calling if they're going to be late, making a note or whatever. Like they're all so on top of it. And then you think like, what do they have in common? Oh, they all show up and do what they said they'd do. You know what I mean?
Well, was it Woody Allen who said 80% of success is showing up? And then Jerry Seinfeld evidently is famously always 5 minutes early.
Wow, that's good. Yeah. My dad always said be 10 minutes early because he said he based it all on church because my dad was very, very Catholic. And he said, because you have to get there 10 minutes early to get in the mood. And that's not just for church, Chrissy. That's for everything in life. Get there 10 minutes early and start thinking about what you're about to do.
That's really good advice. I always heard, you know, on time is late.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I like that one too. Mm-hmm. Well, we should just come up with little puns all day long and just keep going back and forth.
I tell you. Just drop aphorisms. Chrissy and Raj, drop aphorisms. We'll take it.
Now, it's not that I know everybody in town by any means, but I do know a lot of comedians. Now, you perform a lot at the Laugh Factory, and there I haven't had much experience at all, except for standing on the sidewalk for 12 to 14 hours to get the 3 minutes of stage time 20 years ago. Do you ever do that before? Did you ever have to do that?
I did. I did wait outside the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store when I first got here. You know, and that's what I heard before I even moved because I've been doing stand-up on the side for 4 years. I moved here in 06. And that's what a lot of people said. Like, you just have to drop the ego. It doesn't matter how big you were in Cincinnati or even New York, unless you are, I mean, quite big, of course. You have to swallow your ego and you just have to go in and take a number like you're at the deli and at the Comedy Store, it was literally a hat. Like they said, they pulled your name out of a hat and you think it's a proverbial hat. No, it was literally a hat. And I went through the whole process at Laugh Factory and I'm now a regular at all the clubs in LA except the store. I performed at the store in the OR, in the main room, in the belly room multiple times, but I'm technically not a regular there, but I'm a regular in every other major club, I think.
That's awesome. For people that don't know, in other words, like if you're a regular, then you can perform and they might ask you, or you give them your avails every week and they might be able to plug you in anywhere. But if you just perform there, like I had a show there for 2 years in the belly room and I wasn't a regular at the Comedy Store. I just had a room. So if I had booked you, Rajiv, then you'd be at the Comedy Store, but not meaning as a regular, as
correct,
somebody who performed there in a show, et cetera. And then they often do that in the main room too. Like somebody will say like, yeah, man, I'm going to be in the main room. And it's like, okay. Whose showcase are you doing? Because you're not in the main room.
That's right. And the weird thing is there, the OR, the original room, that's the place that's actually like the heralded spot. And I've done it, but it's just been as a guest. I've just been invited. I mean, even on lineups, even by the bookers, but I've never quite passed. I maybe need to take a run at it, but it's become very popular again, the Comedy Store, after years of not, it was huge and then it wasn't. And these things go in waves, you know?
Now, yeah, for sure. And now, well, first of all, they got new carpeting about 2 years ago. I think that helped. And
that helps. They like a hotel.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I think they had like 300 days in a row with sold out shows in three rooms or some crazy, or 300 Saturday nights or 300 something, like a big number. And yeah, they're definitely cooking. Although now after the pandemic, I don't know, man. How are you doing with the Zoom shows, as it were?
I am doing well with them in the sense that I'm doing a number of them, which is great. It's great to be booked. But it's not, you know, and I was actually answering this in an interview earlier today, and I came up on something in this conversation where I said the biggest problem, actually, not only that it's not fun to perform in front of a computer, because we're the producer, we're the ones who are doing it into a computer. The experience for us is very different. At home, it's not that different because people are used to watching comedy on a screen. But what's really, really at variance with a comedy club is in a comedy club, everybody's together. You're all in the same room. So it's very different from an arena or a theater where, hey, there's VIP and there's levels and all that stuff. But, you know, in a comedy club, a lot of them, there really isn't a bad seat. And the people who want to sit in the back or sitting in the back want to. So there's this sense of we're all in this room together, this dark, warm place. And that does not exist. And that's what's made it so tough, I think.
That is so interesting. I never heard of the room like that, but that's so true. There are people that don't go out often to comedy clubs. So when they do, they just want to get right in there up front. And there's other people, especially comics, will always hang in the back. Like, I'll never move forward. That's just not going to happen. Isn't that funny? That's very ironic. That's very funny. Well, anyway, I hope things get back to normal, you know, I don't know. It's such a, I don't even want to get into it because first of all, the idea of story worthy is that it's not topical, that it can be, you know, heard in 5 years. Evergreen. It's all good. But this, yeah, but this pandemic, man, it's just fucking everything up. No, it's just, it's crazy, right? It's really upsetting. Is it? Uh-oh, you froze.
It is.
Okay, hang on.
It is upsetting. And I think one of the biggest problems with it is we just don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to say that one more time because you just cut out. So just if I say it's crazy, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy thing.
It is. And I think one of the things is we don't know how long it's going to last. But I guess the joke I make is, hey, COVID is rampant, but at least FOMO has been eradicated.
Wait, what is FOMO again?
FOMO is fear of missing out. So now nobody can go anywhere. So it's like, hey, we're all home. You're not missing anything. If for all the introverts, they win.
That is so super funny. That's really funny. Yeah, I've had some success doing comedy on Zoom. But what happens is because it's so awkward and, you know, you hear people eating their chips really loud by the microphone, or they're not paying attention at all, or they're talking to somebody in the background, or you hear their TV on. There's very little like focus and concentration and clapping. So what happens when I do it is I just start laughing to myself. So it kind of works out. Like I get out of it what I want, but I can't really take it that seriously, whether my joke works or not, because I can't get past how scattered everything is.
It is. It is. And in this day and age, like you're saying, with pets or kids, and that's constant. But with phones, you know, it's just a whole, and people's pings on the computer, like there's a lot of other things for them to look at on screen. So you, again, you don't have that experience of everybody being in this womb and in that. And because of that, the experience, you just don't know what they're experiencing. Whereas in a comedy club, you know exactly what they're experiencing. Yeah. They're experiencing what the other 300 people are.
Yeah, I understand. Totally. Well, listen, I'm really excited to hear about Antarctica. One more thing, though. You do a lot of corporate gigs, I know. And I see these names on your website. I mean, big names, you know, Netflix and Apple and these big names. So, I mean, I know other comics that do corporate gigs like this. I know it's apparently very fruitious and it's a lot of fun, right? Or is it a tremendous amount of planning and having to put like their company stuff in a script? Is that hard or?
It is hard. I enjoy doing it because I work clean anyway. And so when you work clean, it allows you to do that sort of thing. You know, I was giving a workshop in India, one of the continents. I did Asia, obviously. And one of the students actually asked a very insightful question. And I never heard this insightful question before. He goes, okay, so what is it like performing in a comedy club where nobody knows anybody versus a corporate where everybody knows everybody? I was like, oh my gosh, wow. I got more out of that question than whatever answer I'm going to give you. I had never really thought of it that way. Is that it's not that, so the jokes are harder in that sense because everybody kind of knows everybody. You're the outsider. And then also you're at work, so to speak. So it's not that these people don't have a sense of humor, but these people in this place, it's harder to get these jokes to go through. So it is more of a challenge, which also is, I think, why it's more lucrative, because it's a lot harder, man. It's a difficult thing to do versus a comedy club where people are drinking and it's nighttime and other things like that. Like if you're clean, you work during the day. if you're dirty, you can only work at night.
Let's also, though, throw in the factor that, I just had it on the tip of my tongue. Wait a minute. Oh, that they don't get entertained very often, right? In other words, a lot of these corporate people, man, it is just like their jobs are not fun, funny, creative, or interesting. And they're just getting a paycheck. Now they get like this little, you know, the yearly conference or the break, or they're in the Marina del Rey at the Ritz or something. And then they call in entertainment. So in that respect, you are way ahead.
That is very true. I think the one thing with comedy that is very weird versus music, I'm a big music fan, is that you know what kind of concert you're going to go see. But with comedy, unless you are specifically going to see somebody's show, you don't know if this is hip hop or classical or country or opera. Like, comedian styles are so different that it's just like, here it is. And I think that's the challenge with stand-up comedy, not just at the corporate level, but in general.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I do know you have to be very likable, of course. And you do seem likable. So there you go.
Thank you. I seem likable. I'm not likable, but I seem likable.
I'll see what you're like in a real comedy club. Then I'll know. Boy, oh boy. Talk about like the male-female comedy war going on right now. I have definitely been in situations not even that long ago at all where I totally get you know, you just wouldn't say it to a guy, you know, like a guy at the improv, a guy that works at the improv, you know, I'll say, hey, man, how's it going? So-and-so. And he'll say, pretty good. You look good, Christine. That's why I like you here, man. You know how to dress. Okay. Now, is that like inappropriate or not inappropriate? The way he said it was super gross.
Well,
but it really wasn't. I don't know.
I think, you know, the whole offense thing, they always say offense is taken, not given. And I there's some truth to that, but there's also the truth of intent of what did the person mean? How did it land? So it's a two-way street and this stuff is messy. And comedians generally are very socially awkward. A lot of comedians are not socially well-adjusted. So sometimes we're like, oh man, that guy's a dick. It's like, I don't know if he's a dick as much as he just doesn't really know how to interact with people. And sometimes people are shy. And I think that was on Curb Your Enthusiasm. No. You have shy asshole confusion. You know, he's not an asshole. He's just shy. And there is some truth to that. That said, in 2020 and beyond, like in the 2020s, it's just not really kosher to talk about people's appearances. It just isn't done. Like Kara Swisher is a podcast host and Bill Maher was talking about Mark Zuckerberg and how he was dressing and his hoodie. And, you know, she said, look, don't go there. Like attack the fact that he's the head of an evil corporation and whatever, all the things he's doing, but don't go after his appearance. And she looks nothing like Mark Zuckerberg. But in this day and age, I think it's just become a thing. Like when men go, well, can't I say someone looks nice anymore? You're going, but what's the intent of it really, right? Yeah, it kind of like for a couple of years, I was kind of saying the same thing, maybe not out loud. But you get to a point where you go, why even bring it up, man? Like there are a lot of ugly people out there, but they have good points too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's all about what he meant. But he was like kind of leering at me. And it's just the point is like, I let all that stuff go and I always have let it go. And I'm not sure if that's the right thing to do, but I sort of assume I'm in a world that's kind of like being in the writer's room. Like if you have to restrict words, you got a problem. And I'm bringing up my daughter to not put any weight on any words. I'm telling her it doesn't matter. You call them anything you want, you know, like that. Like she knows I swear and she doesn't swear, but I'm just saying like, it doesn't matter. Like sometimes she'll say, Mama, that's inappropriate. That's inappropriate. I'll say, Bama, it doesn't fucking matter. It's just a word. So there's a couple of different, you know, I don't know. I do know that no matter what set I've ever been on, talk always does turn to sex in one way or another just to kind of get like people's interest piqued or something. And I've definitely been part of those conversations. So, you know, I don't know who's guilty.
It's tough. I mean, I think of the college campus. I do a lot of colleges too, and people warning me, oh my gosh, it's gotten so difficult and whatever. I haven't really had that. I haven't struggled that much. And I think part of that is just, you know, people can get the sense if you're being good-natured or mean-spirited, and that's really what it is. And it's just a feeling they get from you, like you're saying, if you seem likable or not. Like, they're going to process what you're saying very differently because Owen Smith, a friend of mine out here, a comic, a very funny comic, had told me when I first moved here, he said, you should just go a lot edgier, man. He goes, you're so small that when you get angry, it's not it doesn't look like anger. It just looks like a tantrum. And he defined it as whether you could rape the crowd or not. He goes, I'm 6 foot plus and I'm a big dude. I look like I can rape the crowd. You couldn't rape anyone. At least you don't look like you could. So you need to use that to your advantage. I'm like, damn, that is good advice.
That is really good advice. And that also goes to note that, like, when you walk on stage, people have judged you within the first 15 seconds. You know,
the first 1 second.
They've judged you so hard. That for how many?
The first
seconds?
1 second. As soon as they see you, it's blink. They can. They've already, maybe they can't vocalize it, but it's there. The energy you carry to the stage, all that stuff as you're walking to the stage, I think the die is cast 5 seconds in.
Wow. Now, that may change when we're all wearing masks in comedy clubs.
Well said.
All right, you guys, let's get over to Rajiv's story. Now, I did want to remind you before we get to the story that I am doing the Story-Worthy Hour of Power every Sunday night at 6 o'clock. This week coming up will be our 7th week in a row. Rajiv, you have to join us. There's 5 storytellers total, including me. So I book 4 people a week, and it's just 1 hour of true live storytelling. Most of the stories are super funny, but sometimes they're intense. And it's been a blast, you guys. So head over to storyworthypodcast.com, find out more information. You can buy a ticket. And remember, there's always a free option. Yay! All right, you guys, he's here right now. Rajiv Satyal. He's a comedian, obviously. He has 3 comedy albums out. One's called No Man's Land. One is called Rajiv Left to His Own Devices. And one is called Indian Invasion Comedy. And you do perform all over Los Angeles and all over the country. And I know that you've opened for Kevin Nealon, Dave Chappelle, Russell Peters. That's amazing. And you've got a lot of great content on your YouTube as well, man. Really great. You guys can find Rajiv over there on YouTube, or you can find him at his website, rajivsatyal.com. I'm going to spell it because I'm a giver. www.rajiv, that's the first name. Yes, Rajiv. Yes, Satyal, SATYAL.com. There you go. And you can also find him on Twitter at Funny Indian. You guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Rajiv Satyal.
Wow. Thank you, Chrissy, for that amazing introduction. I truly appreciate it. And they can go to funnyindian.com if they want, because that's a little bit easier to spell, funnyindian.com. So thank you for that plug. So I'm here to talk to you about Antarctica and how I became the first person ever, how my job let me travel the world and the 7 seas, where C stands for continent. It's really where my career went south, Antarctica, and I became the first person ever to do stand-up comedy on all 7 continents. So how did it come about? Well, when I was in the Ice House, a comedy club out here in Pasadena, California, I heard a comic say that he had played 6 continents, and I went, or 6 continents that have people, and I wondered, I was like, had anyone done 7? Looked it up. Nope. Turned out that wasn't the case. And I'd already had the good fortune of touring 11 states in India. I was born in Ohio, as you probably guessed. I'm sure nobody guessed that. But I had toured 11 states in India. I don't know if I'm supposed to slow down and let you laugh, or if I should just steamroll this entire thing.
You're doing great, man. You're doing great. First of all, I want to say that I never knew that 7 seas was 7 continents. I never knew that.
It isn't usually. It isn't usually. So that's the pun. But I think the 7 C's, like SEAS, are, I can't name them right now, even though I think we were talking about how much we both love geography.
Oh, I'm such an idiot.
No, it's just, it's a pun. It reads on the page probably better than it translates in a podcast. But no, I had done India. I had done Bangkok, a wedding over there, actually. I had proposed to my wife, actually, that we fly around the world to tackle, not just proposing marriage, but tackling, let's go tackle these three more continents. And comedians, you know us, man, we're a bunch of, you know, loving, laugh-inducing loners, I guess is the way to probably put it. They got me connected. They graciously got me connected to a lot of places. A sit-down comedy club in Brisbane, Australia, the Comedy Store. There's also a comedy store in Sydney, Australia, not related to the one here in LA. And there's the Cape Town Comedy Club in South Africa. And I did something called New York Comedy Night in Paris, run by this guy, Sebastian Marx, who relocated from New York. So that's how I got those continents done. But how was I going to do the last two? How was I going to do South America and Antarctica? Those seemed really, really tough to do. And I didn't really know too many people who had played down there. I don't even know if Gabriel Iglesias, Fluffy has done it. Russell Peters hadn't. And I asked Russell, I said, how come you haven't done South America? Because you've done the other five continents a lot. And he said, there's not that much English down there. I mean, it does exist, but mostly it's Spanish and Portuguese. So it's much harder for him to put together his base of Indians and Asians down there. I don't know how big of a show he could sell out in Buenos Aires, because he usually sells arenas, like 15,000 people or some crazy thing. So I canvassed 87 of my closest friends, and one recommended that I hitch a ride with a group of Indian doctors that were setting sail from Argentina. And it was with a tour called Oceanwide Expeditions, expeditions, not cruises. And I flew to Buenos Aires, and after only a few hours, I realized that I really screwed up by not being born Latino. These folks are so incredible. The food is delicious. The people are beautiful. The vibe is really laid back. It was just really incredible. And so I headlined a gig in Buenos Aires, and I had contacted a bunch of locals on meetup.com. I highly recommend meetup.com if you're going to a city that you don't know and you're not really trying to get on Tinder or anything like that. You can go to meetup.com. I'm not getting paid to say that. I just thought it was a cool thing to do. And we actually went to a club till... I'll tell you what happened, actually, because after the show, there was a group of us, and I said, all right, let's go out. We eat dinner at midnight. That's really true. I wondered. I was like, do they really eat dinner that late in Europe and South America and places like that? And they do. And we go to this club, and it's 1 a.m, Chrissy, and the bouncer says, we don't open till 2. They don't open till 2 a.m. So I go to hug everybody. This is pre-COVID. Parting like it's 2019. And they said, no, there's a bar down the street. Let's go down the street, get a drink. So we do. And at 2:15, we come back and the line is 50 people deep. Can't believe it. 15 minutes after opening, it's a huge line. Cars pulling up, not town cars, but other cars. And we eventually go in, and around 5 a.m, I said, guys, I'm dancing at this point just to say vertical. I'm done. I got to call it. I'm usually the one to shut down the dance floor. And this was a Wednesday. Okay, this is how great Buenos Aires is. This is a Wednesday. It's not even a Saturday. This is a Wednesday. So crashed back in the hotel room. And after wrenching myself away from my newly adopted Argentinian hermanos, I set out for continent number 7 and flew to Ushuaia, which is the southernmost city on Earth. Little claim to fame for Ushuaia, to board the ship. And there were 60 Indian doctors. The cruise held, or the expedition held, about 200 people. But our group was 60 Indian doctors and my Caucasian college roommate, Joe. Joe and I have known each other for over 2 decades. And after asking 87 of my friends, about half of them showed interest. But then my friend Josh goes, let's see how many of them are going to lay down a deposit. That's when you're going to know. And so Joe goes, I'm up for it. I'll totally go. And my wife did not want to go. She was like, I just don't think I'm going to survive the Drake Passage, which I'm going to tell you about. Joe goes, I'm up for it. I'm single. I've got money. Let's do it. So we crossed the 600-mile Drake Passage. What is that? Well, it is home to the world's roughest seas, where ships can pitch up to 40 feet. Okay. So I put on a scopolamine patch. If anybody has seen or read Where'd You Go, Bernadette, people will know what that is. If you haven't, probably never heard of this phrase before, a scopolamine patch. And it's to be applied on a non-hairy part of the body. Well, I'm Indian, so where can I put it besides behind my ear? So I did that. Thanks to this drug, I learned to love the Drake Passage more than I Better Find Your Love and I Better Find Your Heart. That's a passage by Drake. Maybe your daughter would know it. So the ship pitches about 12 feet. In our case. And what is going on with the patch and why you need it and why my wife didn't go is the ship is rocking. So it's going back and forth. It's also rolling. It's going side to side. And then it's also pitching. It's going up and down. So if you're a point in space, you could just imagine this point in space. Just take your finger and just wave it around crazily. That's how you're moving. And so it's rocking and rolling and it's pitching. And out of the 200 people, about 50 got sick despite the patch. It doesn't work for everybody. And that was my worst nightmare. Luckily, it worked for me. You get hallucinations from this drug, but you don't you don't have seasickness, which is, then one of the side effects, by the way, is nausea. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. I'm trying to prevent seasickness, but one of the side effects is nausea. It's like the side effect of a condom being like, it may cause children. Like, well, hold on a second. That's what I'm trying to prevent. Anyway, we approached the continent and I started to really fret. I really started to freak out because it turns out legally, they tell us, no company can actually promise a landing on the continent. And so what does that mean? Would this count? Because Metallica, they once did Enter Snowman on an island within the Antarctic Circle. So you've got the Arctic Circle in the north, you have the Antarctic Circle in the south, and they actually had done an island. They couldn't get to the continent. So if you think about it, if you play Manhattan, right, if you're in New York City, but you play Manhattan, you're in North America, but you're not on North America. You're technically not on the continent. You're on an island, like if you're on Long Island. And if you go to Japan, you're in Asia, but you're not really on Asia. So it becomes this crisis of positions and prepositions. I'm really freaking out. And fortunately, our amazing crew did an amazing job. And they got us onto the Antarctic Peninsula. So it's shaped with Argentina coming down like a finger and the Antarctic Peninsula coming up like Adam and God about to touch each other, like that picture. And I did my stand-up for my cruise mates, my expedition mates, and a bunch of penguins. It was a cold room, but this brown guy did all right in front of a black and white crowd. You're actually allowed to get within 15 feet of the penguins. But if you want to get closer, they have to approach you. It's like Bumble. And the penguins are really cute, but they're aloof. Then again, anytime anyone desperately traveled thousands of miles to come see me, I kind of blew them off too. The highlight of the trip, I think, was seeing 12 whales breach, including one mama whale with her two calves. And I remember we're in the boat next to the ship and we're cruising around. And somebody asked if the family stay together. And I said, well, I guess it depends who they vote for. I made it back to the United States in time to ring in the new decade with my wife. I missed Christmas, but I did message her from Buenos Aires. And I said, you know, I'm in South America. Let me know if you need anything from Amazon. And if you want to go, now is the time. Just so you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it with COVID. But Antarctica recently hit 70 degrees. And with climate change, you may not have to go to Antarctica. It may be coming to you. I'm not really sure what it says about me that it was easier for me to get my stand-up on Antarctica than it has been on late night TV, but maybe that's next. Thank you.
Wow. That's a great story, Rajiv. I'm so happy you went. That is so great that you went. And I'm really glad your roommate went. He sounds like a good guy, man.
Super good guy. Thanks. I appreciate the compliments. And you know, they're really, even though he knows I asked a lot of other people, I go, man, I'm really glad it's you. Like he's just a super chill guy. And I was so happy that he said yes.
Yeah. You're not going to have any squabbles or fights with like a roommate from college. You know what I mean? It's totally. Not like a wife or a child or something. Okay. So did he get sick through the Drake Passage?
He did not. And so you feel bad for the people who are sick and they just start another one bites the dust. They just start going to their rooms or whatever. There's a bar on board though. And we're living it up. Like we're having a great time. And actually the fewer people, you have more room and whatever else. But luckily he and I were good. We had grabbed a couple of drinks at the bar every night.
Yeah. You're really lucky because I've been on like deep sea fishing trips and stuff. And if you get sick on the way out, you're done. It's like, you're screwed the whole time you're out there. It's going to suck. And even coming back, it's just seasickness stays with you. You know, it stays with you for so long. So my question is then, what was it that you took that gave you hallucinations? How do you say that? Hallucinations.
Yeah, you can get,
how do you say that word?
You're making it too complex. It's actually hallucinations. So you're just making it harder for yourself.
Hallucinations. Got it. Jesus.
Yeah. 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 No, it's good that you don't know how to pronounce it because it means you probably don't get them. So I think some comic did a bit about how somebody spelled syphilis wrong. And he goes, the only people who know how to spell syphilis are the people who have it. So I'm glad I don't know how to spell it. So same thing with hallucinations. But no, the scopolamine, one of the side effects is hallucinations. So what had happened, because seasickness is so bad, I kept mine on, and a number of people took theirs off when we got close enough to the continent. They said, dude, you're fine now. I took one off, then I got paranoid. I put another one on. And so I had not quite a double dose, but probably like a 1.3 dose. And hallucinations are caused by that, but they're not as scary. The word hallucinate is really scary. It sounds like it's going to be ghosts and people trying to stab you. And it's really not that bad. It's kind of like you're in the middle of a dream and you start talking out loud because you think that people are there, but it's usually friendly. It's like your family and friends. I thought my wife was there. I thought my mom was there. But it's not scary. So that was a good part.
Well, I'm just thinking about, because then you're going to perform stand-up. And even if it's just like friends on Antarctica, every comic is freaking for at least a second before you know, because it is a bit of nervousness thinking that I got to talk for 30 minutes and hope these people don't turn away. And so when did you do it exactly? Like, in other words, you couldn't compete with Penguin. So it's not like you can just get there and start talking. I mean, what was the trip or what was the process there? What did that look like?
So I did not tell anyone what I was doing until I got down to Buenos Aires and even Ushuaia, because I was like, well, if somebody's done six, maybe they'll beat me. I'm just being overly competitive. But it was like, yeah, who's going to do that? Anyone who's got the means isn't going to just fly there and do it. They're going to be booked on shows anyway. They're so popular or famous. They're probably already doing New Year's shows. And this is at the end of December of 2019. So, you know, there was nervousness. But when I talked to the expedition leader, I said to her, I'd like to do this on the continent. She goes, well, realize the landings are short. You're only on the continent for about an hour. And she goes, people want to go see seals and penguins and glaciers. So you're going to need to cue people up and let them know, hey, I'm going to do this thing. And she goes, I advise just doing like 3-4 minutes and being done. So I did a lot of stand up on the crew, on the expedition, on the ship. I only did maybe 10 minutes on the actual continent, because people don't want to watch a stand-up comic. To your point, they want to go see penguins. I do too. So, I don't want to hear myself.
I know. So why only an hour? What's that?
Why only an hour to land? Because it's interesting. There's a rule down there to preserve the continent that only it's 200 people at a time can be within 100 miles of each other on the peninsula. It's some kind of formula. So they had to time it with other ships to see when we could go, and you didn't want to hog it. Like, they just say, hey, you get in there, get out so other people can go. And so it's all this very reciprocal process where nobody's hogging and people are respecting each other, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah, and only what, like 100 people at a time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you do landings in groups of four.
So that's very interesting, and they call it a landing, not a docking?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, they do. Because technically, your ship, I guess, is out at sea. You're probably maybe a few football fields away from the continent, and then you get in these Zodiac boats, and the 200 people are divided into four groups, so about 50 people, and two groups land at a time. So in essence, I guess, I don't know why they divide us into four. They could just divide us into two. But you get on these boats, and then you go to the continent. But there are a couple points of danger here. And I'll say three things. One is that it's not that cold. If you go in December, it's summer down there. And the person who is organizing it, Chrissy, is based in Chicago. And he said it's actually been colder in Chicago every single time he's gone than Antarctica. The high is like 35 degrees and the low is like 18. It's not that cold.
Wow, that's very interesting. That I wouldn't have known for sure. So I had a few more questions for you, because this really cracked me up. When you do land, what is there?
Right. Okay. So that's a great question. And part of the reason also is the weather changes a lot. And so in the weather, in a weird way, it can just be a few waves. Like, the waves are only 2 or 3 feet, but you're in Zodiac boats, so they can tip over. So because people are going, why aren't you just ramming the ship right into the continent? No, because it's mostly rocks. So there are only a few people, like, it's ice, obviously, but around the water where the ice is melted during the summer, you have to be very careful. Like, the boats can only go a few different places, and there are icebergs. And so you can only get within, people forget, right? The tip of the iceberg, quite literally, is that 10% of it is above and 90% of it is below. They can tip. So wow. In the summer, they can tip over and they could send a boat flying. Like, you would die if one of these not just fell on you. You're not worried about an iceberg falling on you. You're worrying about it tipping the other way, and then you'd be scooped up by the under part of the iceberg and fly through the air to your death. So I don't know who. So of course, somebody had to figure this out the hard way. I don't think anybody realized that until it actually happened.
You learned so much down there. That is fascinating. What a great trip for you. Wow. Wow. That is so exciting. Yeah, I would think that your wife, was she at all bummed out that she didn't go, or is she figuring she wouldn't have made it through the Drake Passage?
She just really feels like the Drake Passage wasn't worth the risk. She goes, if I knew for sure I would have been okay, I would have done it. But she goes, the fact that 50 out of 200, like one out of four people still got ill, she goes, I mean, obviously there's a 25% chance, right? So it's, she felt like that was too risky to ruin the rest of the holidays.
I get that. No, I totally get that. So what were the 60 Indian doctors doing?
Great question. So there's a group of Indian doctors. It's just this organization called API, and they just wanted to go. Like, it wasn't really part of any, it was recreational. It wasn't like they were going down there to save somebody's life or something like that. But that's a good part, is if you're feeling about, oh my gosh, I feel unsafe, you couldn't go with a better group of people than people who obviously can give you medical care than doctors.
Yeah, that's true, man. That's a really good way to look at it. Now, are there any other animals, or is it really just the penguins?
It's whales on the way there. There's penguins. Oh, yeah. There's krill, which you can't really see, but seals. And then there's some birds like albatrosses and stuff like that. But what's the other thing? I feel like I'm leaving something out. Seals, penguins, and
are there puffins? Are there puffins?
Those puffins are in the north.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I know. I learned that too. And I do feel like I'm leaving something out.
Sea lions?
No, I think there's just seals, although I get them mixed up, just like Louis C.K., rest in peace. And I'm glad you left.
Hey, you know, you were talking about, you mentioned Gabriel Iglesias. Now, here's a comedian. I met him 22 years ago. We used to teach traffic school together in the improv traffic school. And Gabriel and I, you know, I knew him for but maybe 1 or 2 years. Like, I didn't know him well. Anyway, the point is, I'm walking through the Burbank airport last year. I see him. Hey, Christine, how's it going? Like, he remembers everybody. That guy's an amazing comedian. I am sort of surprised that he hasn't played Antarctica.
That's actually what I thought too. He was the first person I looked up. I was like, he might have done South America just because of the Spanish connection. And then I thought, well, then maybe he's gone, but it would have been captured somewhere. It would have been big news, you know?
Yeah. Do you speak any other languages?
I wish I did. I speak a little bit of Hindi, but I grew up in Ohio, man. So my parents spoke English at home. They came here in you know, 71. So I wish I did. I really do.
Your parents, they obviously speak Hindi. They could have taught you, but they just said, no, it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
You know, at the time, my theory is that before 1984 in this country, the mantra was assimilation. They just wanted to assimilate. Diversity wasn't cool. It wasn't a thing. You know, so most of the Indians born here, or even any immigrants born here, before 84, I feel like we don't speak that. But now the kids after that, they do. They speak English, they speak Hindi, they'll speak, you know, Punjabi and whatever else. So it's become amazing. Cool after that.
Yeah, totally. But you obviously went around Asia because you were in Thailand and you were in India. Did you go to Mumbai, you said?
Yeah, performed in Mumbai a bunch of times.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. I mean, a bunch of times.
Yeah. I mean, I've done multiple trips there, so I don't know how many shows I've done there, but probably at least 20.
Oh my gosh. No, that's a lot, Rajiv. That's a lot. And just in terms of the distance, I mean, talking about flying around the world, that's especially from LA. Well, I guess it depends on which way you go. The point is, and then you're in Brisbane, and then you're just going everywhere. I think that's really great. I admire you. You don't have children then, right?
We do not have children, which helps. You know, if I had to give a sponsor right now, it'd be like, on behalf of the fact that we don't have children, I want to thank the ones that aren't here.
Well, it's so true, because it's just a different level of worry, and it's okay. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's a, you know, in terms of like taking chances, especially now with COVID, you got to consider, you know, there's just, you know, as soon as the baby's born, it's like you get another set of worry in your head that you didn't even know existed. You thought, oh, I like the puppy once. Oh, I like that cat. But you don't even know until, you know, and then everything shuts down. But that, you know, the focus on. So I'm happy you've done so much stuff before you do have children. If you have children, who knows, right?
You never know.
You never know. Hey, listen, man, thank you so much for telling that story. I learned a lot as well. And it's just, it was really, really cool. Thank you. And it's nice now to, especially to kind of escape for an hour and not think about, you know, what necessarily is happening now, but what we can do. People, you can go to Antarctica. You shouldn't go though, right? You don't advise people to go.
Right now, it may be impossible, but someday again, you can go.
Have you ever been to the Galapagos by any chance?
No, and that's the weird thing is I'm not, other than that, ironically, that well-traveled. I've been to 17 countries, but the people on the expedition, a lot of them had been to well over 100. It was weird for me to be so not well-traveled, but I've heard great things about the Galapagos.
Yeah, you haven't been all over Europe?
No, I've only went to London as a kid, but I performed in Paris and Geneva as a stand-up in Warsaw actually very recently. And I've maybe been to I've been to Spain for our honeymoon. Yeah, only like 5 countries in Europe. That's about it.
Wow, that's kind of interesting. I mean, I guess it just depends on the tour and everything else. April Macy was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Tremendous comic. Do you know April?
I know of her, of April, but not personally.
Yeah. She has a home and a bar and restaurant in Florence, Italy. And so I think there must be some great stand-up. I mean, I'm sure there's stand-up, obviously, everywhere.
Well, I know Brent stole a lot of stuff from her. Oh, no, that wasn't Macy's. That was Dillard's. Never mind.
Really appreciate it.
I had a great time. Thank you for having me, Chrissy. I was honored, and I'm glad that Paul Lander could connect us. Good dude.
He is a good dude, for sure. He's helped me get a couple of people. It's just great. Yeah, I appreciate it very much. All right, you guys, we got to get going, but I did want to remind you to head over to storyworthypodcast.com and get information on the story, Worthy Hour of Power. Like I said, we're doing 5 stories in an hour, and then there's an after show. And guess what? At the after show, we're playing Story Smash. It's hilarious. Peter Melman, who was a regular judge anyway on the show, he judged it last week, and it's super funny. So again, head over to storyworthypodcast.com and get yourself a ticket. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Rajeev Sethyal. Thank you so much, Rajeev. I'm so happy to meet you.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time. You're an amazing interviewer, and this was just a great hour, the best hour of the day.
Oh, thanks so much. All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.